What's good, everybody? Pete, Rob, and guest Nick Alberga here from Sportsnet talking fantasy pucks. And guys, we're 1 week closer to training camps.
Yeah, feeling good, guys. How you doing up in Toronto, Nick?
Go ahead, Nicky.
Yep, I'm phenomenal. As you guys know, on Twitter on a daily basis, I count down the number of days until training camps 2.0. I believe we're sitting at 25, so slowly but surely we're getting there. And I'm fired up as the days go by here.
Well, 1 day closer, and it feels like forever until it starts, but we're getting there. Slowly and surely, we're getting there.
Yeah, and you're starting to see guys travel back over to North America. You're also still see some guys working in their own whereabouts and outdoors and stuff like that. We hope everybody's doing well. Hopefully, the league can make everything happen leading up to training camps, which begin July 10th. And Nick, we have we have a lot to discuss here with the playoff pools. Past couple of episodes have been devoted to it. We've talked positions, we've talked round by round, we've talked full playoff pools for the entirety of the Stanley Cup run. Who would you take first in a Stanley Cup playoff pool? Is it the Oiler guys? Is it Pasta? Is it somebody else?
So first and foremost, I like the concept that you guys have put together here, because when I try my best to describe fantasy pools to prospective fantasy players, I feel like it's really subjective on your playoff tree, right? Your bracket, you know, I love the word bracket, whatever you want to call it in terms of who you think will go the furthest, I think dictates how your rankings go. For instance, I mean, you guys have Drysdale and McDavid 1 and 2, and that makes all the sense in the world. Far and away, the two best point totals this season in the NHL, they dominated. But can we sit here and say we think Edmonton is a bona fide Stanley Cup contender? Who truly knows, right? I mean, it's an unprecedented time. We've never been in a stop-restart type scenario like this. So I would probably position myself if I were, you know, strategizing for an upcoming draft, or I'm probably not leaning as heavily to guys like that, because I remember in years past too, when I've done playoff pools, if I don't feel strongly about the Art Ross Trophy winner, I'm not sure I'm going there. But again, I totally understand. Like, how do you overlook just Drysdale? How do you overlook McDavid? That's probably where I sit. I think in terms of Stanley Cup picks, I'll probably still go with what I intended, and that was Vegas and Tampa in my Stanley Cup final. So I don't know. I might lean towards Kucherov with my first overall pick. But again, there's a lot of variables in play, and I think you guys did an excellent job here.
I think that's safest, Nick, you know, taking a team that you do trust, whatever team it is, whoever you're picking to go to the Cup final. Go with the guys your gut says to trust. I think the real argument for me and McDavid or Drysdale, and it would be Drysdale if I was sitting in number one, is just, let's say they do play five games, all five against the Chicago Blackhawks. They get through to the actual postseason playoffs. Then in that scenario, they're definitely going seven. There's no way in this league, the star of the league, the face of the league, and Connor McDavid is not playing a full seven-game series, and he's not. Absolutely no way he's not at least scoring a point or two per night minimum. So I think even if you're getting 12 games there, Nick, out of a guy like McDavid or Drysdale, that's at least 20 points in a playoff pool, which that's my logic for selecting those guys, no matter how far they go, even if they get bounced in the first round of the actual playoffs.
And I think the important thing to stress, I think you make excellent points, is I think if anybody out there listening is strategizing to play in a playoff pool, I think you want to look at teams, honestly, who score a lot. And again, these are uncharted territories and waters. And, you know, for example, I'm not sure I'm looking at Dallas. I'm not sure I'm looking at St. Louis, especially in that central, very defensive, happy teams. Even Nashville comes to mind. I think you want to look at these offensive juggernauts. And for sure, I mean, if you're going to the Oilers, those are the big two you're going after. Tampa Bay, same conversation. Washington as well. So I think from a strategy standpoint, you know, that's pretty smart. But I totally get your reasoning, Rob. Those are two hard guys to overlook for sure, Pete.
One guy I don't think we've talked about individually in the past few shows since we brought up the playoff pools is Nathan MacKinnon. Like, he has to be in that conversation as well with his high shot volume, with all the guys Colorado's getting back from injury. And he broke out full-fledged in the playoffs last year and got really deep into the second round. So, I mean, to me, that's one of the teams that jump out as one of the teams most likely to win it all this year. I really like them. So, therefore, Nathan MacKinnon is a great pick at number one as well.
I think Mac's right up there too, Pete. And I think the reasoning would come down to do I trust Colorado to go far again? Do I trust their goaltending situation to really drill down and solidify their spot as a true bona fide contender? Absolutely. I think in that case, Pete, if you believe that, I think McKinnon makes more sense than Draisaitl or McDavid. I think the only reason why I would still lean Draisaitl or McDavid is simply because I think their talent level alone can offset anything else. Whereas I think the Avalanche, with all their injuries this year, now granted, you could spin that into a positive and say all the adversity, which I'm totally fine with, but I just think that McDavid and Draisaitl are on another level, and McKinnon is close, but I want that extra juice, that extra third period, overtime winning goal, whatever it is, coming from McDavid or Draisaitl.
I won't lie, this conversation triggers me to last springtime and everybody going hunky-dory and crazy about the Tampa Bay Lightning, right? Kucherov, Stan, I don't know about you guys in your pools. Everybody went nuts, you know, Braden Point, all these Lightning, four games in finito, right? So I think what we're trying to encourage out there for anybody listening is just more so the fact that I think you guys would agree it's imperative first and foremost to branch out, right, and say who you like in each series and go from there, reseed them. Heck, we have all the time in the world. Set yourself up accordingly to win that money, right? If you're playing for money, that's great. If you're playing for bragging rights, that's fantastic. But set yourself up, set your tree up, and go from there and really zero in on some guys you think will go far. Like, for example, even in my market here in Toronto, I'm not sure I'm going nuts and I'm jumping to get Austin Matthews or a Mitch Marner or a John Tavares. It's not because I don't think those guys are capable of going off for a couple games. It's more so the way the seedings would work out. I think they could be on a collision course with a team like the Boston Bruins once again. It's going to be a tough route to go far. And I think that's the key in these type of drafts, is that you want to extract the most point value out of your roster. So I'd probably steer clear of players like that. But again, very subjective. Who do you like? Who don't you like?
Well, one note on Matthews. I mean, you look at this guy's goal totals, his first four seasons, 40, 34, 37, and now 47 in a shortened season. I mean, I'm waiting for this guy to, you know, come up big in the playoffs. I mean, he's shown some flashes. He's had some struggles. But Austin Matthews is another one of those candidates to take that bona fide next step into poster board material and, you know, just – take the Leafs to a playoff series win, which is long overdue.
I want to tee Nick up for a second on that player in particular. This year in the postseason, it's going to be under coach Sheldon Keefe. Maybe a little bit different than Mike Babcock. I know they actually did look similar play styles in the regular season. Maybe that wasn't enough of a sample size to see what Sheldon Keefe is going to do in the postseason. But for Matthews, I know the biggest complaint, Nick, last year in the postseason, game seven, people were saying Babcock didn't play Matthews enough. I was kind of on the fence on that criticism because Matthews was kind of dictating when he got off the ice. I think it was maybe 50-50 blame on each side. Do you think there's anything that Sheldon Keefe is going to do differently to maybe try to get a little bit more out of guys like that?
Well, first and foremost, it's the system. I think they play more of an upbeat system under Sheldon Keefe. And secondly, it's the opponent, right? It was the Boston Bruins. They went to the Stanley Cup final. That is one of the most seasoned teams still going in this league, and they're a tough out. Again, they're going to be a difficult out. They were cruising to a President's Trophy. I think when you look at the Leafs right now, how they're structured against a team like Columbus, I don't think that's going to be an offensive series. I think if Toronto could win games 4-2, I think they would be happy. I don't project them scoring 6-7 goals. It's just more so the system that I know Columbus will have in play for that series. They have to have something where they can benefit greatly and be positive and wait for that mistake. And I'm not going to say they're going to trap, but John Tortorella is one of the wiser minds in this league, right? He's been in pivotal games before, whether it be, you know, with the Rangers or the Tampa Bay Lightning. He's coached in these type of elements, and I think he'll structure his game plan. And, you know, for starters, Columbus plays that way anyways, where they're going to be patient, sit back, wait for the Maple Leaf mistakes, as opposed to foot on the pedal the way the Maple Leafs would play and just go after you right away. But I think Toronto does have that elite game-breaking ability where they can blow you out if you're not on top of your game. So that's another thing to watch for in that series when it comes to Columbus. You know, we often talk about defense. Well, I mean, you've had 3.5 months off here. To come back and play, you know, sterling defense is another conversation, right? So I honestly feel like, you know, the teams that can adapt the most and can get their game going the quickest are obviously going to have a lot of success going forward here.
The more I think about that Sheldon Keefe factor, I like it as it pertains to Matthews, because you think back to last postseason, the figure you were mentioning, Rob, 1848, minutes played in game seven. That's not enough for a player of Matthews' caliber, no doubt about it. So, yeah, you look at now, it's kind of like Matthews could be unleashed a little bit. And when you think about Babcock's demeanor, it's different than Tortorella's. Tortorella can get under your skin and make you play defensive hockey, but still motivate you to the highest level. And he's won the Stanley Cup. Babcock has too, but as Babcock's career went on, you know, things went south a little bit. So I like Keefe from that standpoint of Matthews to kind of like let him loose and just kind of let him trust his game and build his confidence. And they need a confident Austin Matthews to get by.
100%, Pete. They absolutely need a confident 34 to get to the next round. One more thing before we move on from the Leafs here, Nick. Tyson Barrie, Morgan Rielly on the blue line. The Leafs I had going to the Cup Final, that was my preseason pick. I don't know how I feel about that now, but that's what I felt back in September. With that said, if you do, or if you're in the camp that I've made that prediction, if you're thinking the same thing that I was, are you going to take a Tyson Barrie or a Morgan Rielly in a postseason pool? If you had to choose one or the other, which way do you lean?
So first and foremost, the big word is potential, because, you know, I scoffed at the idea of the Maple Leafs going far, but they have so much potential. Can they buckle down defensively is my question. As for your question about Barrie and Morgan Rielly, I would probably side with Morgan Rielly. I never from the beginning thought it was a perfect fit for Tyson Barrie because they have the right-handed example who plays better defensively in Morgan Rielly. And I think we started to see that as soon as Rielly came back for those couple games, that he really took over once again on the first power play unit. So I think he's more prone to play with four of the big boys, on PP1, and Tyson Barrie will get less opportunity on PP2. So I would have a guy like Morgan Rielly way more ranked higher in terms of a guy like Tyson Barrie, because it's just been that type of year, and Tyson Barrie in the last couple months has already been talking about free agency. How can you really rely on a guy like that when, you know, A, the market is already all over him, and B, he's got one foot out the door? So I think Morgan Rielly has been a steady, steady fantasy defenseman for a long period of time. He had a tough year with injury, but I think in a playoff format and in time where he's had, you know, time to think about things and reset and restart, I think he's a scary wild card in terms of a fantasy hockey going forward here. I like Rielly a lot.
Before I let Pete chime in on the Rielly Barrie scenario, Nick, I just want to know what happens in Toronto, because I'm looking at the lines and I'm saying to myself, I understand Tortorella. I understand the Blue Jackets. I love Toronto in that first round around minus 150.
Yeah.
I just want to know what happens in Toronto, the outcry, if they lose that series, if they can't get past the Blue Jackets in that first round, that qualifying round. Do they play tight because of that? I mean, I know it's always a storyline in Toronto. I want to hammer them. I really do. But then I wake up in a night sweat and I see Tortorella behind the bench, and then I see, you know, Matthews pouting, and I see the frustration that the Blue Jackets may cause with the Leafs. And then I wonder about the fans, and but they're not playing on their home ice, right? They don't have to worry about that. So maybe they play loosey-goosey and they get unleashed, like Pete said. But I just can't imagine what happens if Toronto loses that series to the Blue Jackets and just the vibe in that city.
You're right. And I think part of this conversation is the fact that we've had so long already to dwell on these potential matchups. I think people are making way too much of this series, more than they should. I think Toronto clearly is a definitive favorite. I think the better team, more offensive weapons. I do think Columbus has a shot, but in my opinion, at least, it's not as close as people think. I've watched these two teams play throughout this season. You can make your case about injuries. Toronto had some of those as well. I think it would be pandemonium. It would be craziness if the Maple Leafs couldn't get by Columbus. But more times than not, in a five-game, a seven-game series, you're going to find out who definitively is the better team. So no doubt, I think Sheldon Keefe will have the Maple Leafs ready to play. And I do think sort of a restart favors a team like the Maple Leafs, who are young, they're quick, you know, they're hungry. They've had time to chill with their family and friends. And I think they're going to come back a team that's refreshed and not really think about what happened earlier this season. Because we do forget, for all the ridicule that Maple Leafs took, they were actually still a really good team this season, right? They had a lot of downs, but tons of ups, and they were in a playoff spot. And I think potential is the key with this team. So I think Toronto's going to win that series. I think they're going to win it handily. I know people don't agree with me, but that's them and I'm me, I guess.
Yeah, my initial pick was Columbus, but the more you really think about it, I think the appeal in Columbus is that maybe they would push them to the limit, maybe even get over the top. But really, you'd have to say 75% chance that the Leafs should win the series, and they probably will. I mean, I was playing devil's advocate, but yeah, I think even with the blue line, I mean, Tyson Barry we saw for so many years and with the Avalanche, and again, throw out that regular season where he was a little subpar. He's still playing for a new contract. Morgan Rielly 2 years ago was a 70-point defenseman. So, like, just ridiculous numbers to play around with. And again, the new wrinkle with Sheldon Keefe should get them over the top, I think.
What about something you guys were talking on a little bit earlier? Dallas, you brought up, Nick, teams that don't have a high octane offense. How about a team like Nashville, guys? We haven't really discussed them too much in these postseason podcasts. Is there any chance, Pete or Nick, that you guys think that Nashville can find a new gear, whether it's Ryan Johansson elevating his game, Philip Forsberg taking over these situations, or Mikael Granlund even stepping up and kind of becoming the player that he was with the Wild?
I mean, I think it's going to fall heavily on Duchesne. I thought it was really strange this year that Duchesne was playing so much wing. He should be center. You need your centers to be alive and well in the playoffs. Potential bounce backs collectively on separate lines from Duchesne and Johansson would be huge and could give them a bit of a shelf life in the playoffs. Overall, I'm not so sold on Nashville, but like crazier things have happened. This team's made a deep run before. They're grizzled in that way. And I think that with that defense still intact, with the Ekholm and the Ellis and still Roman Josi at the top of his game, like they do have that type of ceiling.
You're right. Like, people are making a lot about Arizona. Did anybody watch Arizona play this season? They have all these offensive guys, but they play a defensive system. And I truly do feel like a team like Nashville could be a massive sleeper in these Stanley Cup playoffs. If they can even get like a smidget of offense contribution from their top two centers, Kyle Turris, I'll throw him into the conversation as well. Those names on paper, you're like, wow, that roster is stacked. Ryan Johansson, Matt Duchesne, Roman Josi could win the Norris Trophy. You know, I think it's a really intriguing debate what they do in between the pipes. Before the break, Saros had appeared in 9 of 10 games, but it's still Pekarinen behind him, right? So they've got to make those decisions, and hopefully they're the right one. Not to mention they made a coaching change this season. John Hines is the coach of this team, but I think Nashville is certainly a team that can catch fire randomly. And you can't even say randomly, just more so a team that really finds its groove. Because, you know, the names you just mentioned, there are guys on that roster that have done it before. They have guys in the back end. If you look at the three major factors in any series, goaltending, defense, and offense, I think Nashville, you can make a case for that team. So that's a really good point. Nobody's talking about them because I think everybody's hot and heavy over the Arizona Coyotes, who have done nothing in the last 10 years, I think, since they went to the conference final against the Los Angeles Kings. It's been that long, right? So I like that team on paper, Arizona, but they got like a couple bona fide weapons and they don't play an offensive style. So I think Nashville gets by them at least. I'll say that.
Pete's going to be upset with me because I'm going to take the train off the tracks for just a second, Nick, because I want your thoughts on this argument that I'm hearing everyone talk about for the Norris Trophy. Are you going with Roman Josi or are you going with Carlson? Where do you stand on that before Pete chimes back in and gets the train back on the tracks? I want to hear from Nick Alberga. Who is your Norris Trophy winner, Nicholas?
I'll preface by saying I've had conversations with people in the PHWA, former players in the league over the last week, and I'm still on the John Carlson train. The only reason why I say that, however, and whether anybody who votes on this will admit it, it has always been a points-driven award. I look at the point tallies, same number of games played, 10 more points for John Carlson. I get it. He slowed down in the second half. I'm not telling you who the top defenseman is. I'm telling you who should win the Norris Trophy because it's more times than not a guy who's got the most points. I think John Carlson doesn't get enough respect, and I think it's because the Great Eight, Nick Backstrom, Kuznetsov, that roster is fantastic. But the same can be said about Nashville, right? I think from an insulation standpoint, same old story there. I know Ryan Ellis was banged up this year, but they still have Matthias Ekholm. They have a defensive system. They got two competent goaltenders, although goaltending was a big-time issue. So I'm still leaning with John Carlson, and I had this debate with good friend of the podcast, Chris Mason, up in Nashville with Fox Sports Tennessee on Twitter the last week. Just, I see where you're coming from when it comes to Roman Josi. The guy's an absolute stud. I think if you're asking me all-round defenseman, it's far and away Roman Josi this year. But I think From how we deem the Norris Trophy and how we give away that award, I think I'm going John Carlson. And people, it's a recency thing, right? Roman Josi was outstanding in the last month and last half of the season, at least, and people are all over it. But I think we do forget how great of a year John Carlson truly had this year.
Yeah, John Carlson, that start he got off to, and yeah, it was almost impossible to fall off from that. It was historical stuff. So, but one thing about Josi, like, I feel like Josi might be a better MVP candidate because he led Nashville in scoring ahead of their best forward by 17 points, 17 more points than Philip Forsberg. Are you kidding me? So that's one thing in Yossi's corner for sure. And then back to Nashville and just their chances of going deep. To me, like, I don't understand why people are even talking about a goalie debate, because UC Saros was probably the hottest goalie in the entire NHL the past month before the pause. I know momentum halts with this pause, but still, UC Saros should start game one for that team and probably the entire playoffs.
I just think it's unfortunate, Pete, because the track record is Pekka in Pekka's favor. And John Hines, you know this. New coach, new team. He's going to get nervous. UC Saros has a bad game in game one. Phil Kessel breaks out with a hat trick. He's putting Pekka in net for game two. That's my only – and this is the problem. I've been a Saros guy for years. I know, I think all of us on this podcast have been waiting in fantasy during the regular season for Saros to get his share. But this is the problem with Nashville. Pekka, that's his team. That's been his team in the postseason, in the regular season, for as long as I can remember watching the Predators play now. So that's my only issue. It's John Hines. I know he's going to go back. I know he's going to buckle a little bit and say, we're going back to Rene. And then sure enough, Rene's going to come in there, shut things down in game two. And we're going to be talking about the same thing in the fall. Where do we draft Saros? Is this going to be his year? It's going to be the same conversation for the 10th season in a row.
You never know. Coming soon to NHL.com/fantasy could be the top fantasy storylines going into the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I, for one, have been mulling this over since the season ended. Do you go Saros? Do you go Rene? Especially in this format, right? They're going to have a couple of exhibition games. What do you do, right? And I think that's what amplifies things even more. We look at a team, for example, like the Boston Bruins. Hell of a year. They were outstanding, dominated the league. They could easily come out and just, you know, they're not having it. They're not playing well. And next thing you know, they're done. That's why I think handicapping in general from a betting standpoint is so difficult in these Stanley Cup playoffs as opposed to anyone we've had.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. It's going to be unpredictable. It always is unpredictable, but this is going to be a new level here. And another guy, if you're in a playoff pool and looking for sleepers, Victor Arvidsson was a guy that was really fantasy relevant for a few years running, plays all situations, had a really down regular season, 28 points in 57 games. That's not cutting it. He fell off the map. But again, with the new clean slate, Victor Arvidsson's a high impact player. If the Preds go two rounds, he'll give you some nice sleeper value.
I think I would make the argument here that the more we discuss Nashville, I still have a lot of concerns about that team. I just looked at their hockey DB here. I mean, two forwards with 40 points. Come on. Like, that is not going to get it done. I mean, even against the Coyotes, you're going to be lucky to scrape by there with that kind of offense. Yeah. So I think I would move ahead here and look at Dallas as an actual team that I feel a lot more secure about them breaking out, about Seguin finding the scoring, Radulov, Ben shutting things down, chipping in a couple goals offensively. Like, if I'm actually drafting these guys in a fantasy pool, I'm going to side with guys on Dallas. And maybe, Pete, you know, I come in there in the late round and I do take a Vic Arvidsson hoping that they do make a deep run.
Seguin, every year for so long, was hitting all those benchmarks that you covet for fantasy. He was hitting 70 points. He was hitting like 25 goals. He was hitting 20 power play points and like 200, 300 shots, whatever it was. He's always near the top of the league. But this year, he's shooting less than 7%. That's one of the worst among all the volume shooters in the NHL. So hope for that bounce back appeal here for Seguin. And then he could win you your fantasy pool. Like Robbie was saying, he has that type of an impact.
Yeah, and that's what I think makes Dallas a really scary team, is they've had an excellent year and they haven't played up to snuff offensively. I think a sleeper in fantasy pools can be a Joe Pavelski. I don't think by any stretch he had a good year in his first year. And I understand, you spend all that time in one team, you go to a new one, it's going to say, you know, there's going to be some growing pains. But he's definitely a guy I'll look late in my drafts and my fantasy playoff drafts to look at, because I think he's done it in the Stanley Cup playoffs before, right? All those games with the San Jose Sharks. And I think he has a lot left in the tank. And then on top of that, you come in fresh, and you hope that guys like Radulov and Seguin and Ben, there's so many weapons on that Dallas team. I think that's why they have to be, you know, in a short list of candidates to go all the way. Not to mention, they're what, the best team in the NHL defensively. Ben Bishop was outstanding. Anton Khudobin is some good insulation and some insurance behind him. Miro Heiskanen rapidly becoming one of the top defensemen in this league. John Klingberg, one of the best power play quarterbacks you can find right now. So they tick a lot of boxes. But again, you wonder about that central. You wonder about the reseeding, and you wonder about getting hot at the right time. And that, honestly, you can pose that question for every team playing in this format.
Let's talk about reseeding for a team like the Philadelphia Flyers. Their top-ranked player in our postseason rankings is Claude Giroux, coming in at 35. Now, to some people, they might say, well, doesn't that seem low, considering that they were neck and neck for first in the Metro all season long? How do you guys think that Philadelphia shakes out here if things reseed and maybe they draw up against the Pens or the Caps? You know, like a tough matchup like that, interdivisional play.
I don't worry about the Flyers too much, especially if they match up against the Penguins. They have they have all that experience through the years. Those guys, Giroux, Voracek, Couturier, it feels like they've played them a couple of times. I know they have in their careers. And yeah, the way they were playing, I feel like they are one of the most confident teams in the league going into the bye, certainly in the top five in that department. And then, yeah, with Hart and Provorov, like we were touting in the previous shows, I mean, they have a chance to put all the pieces together here. And, yeah, even like Voracek, I noticed Voracek wasn't in our top 100 overall players. He was probably the first one out off that list. But that is a guy that could produce a point per game over two or three rounds. I don't think anybody would doubt his capability of doing that.
You want to hear a nice sleeper, number 69, Travis Konecny, on your rankings, by the way, Provorov at 68.
Nice.
Yes, very nice. But I think Konecny is a guy who benefited greatly from all eyes being – and Alain Vigneault deserves a lot of credit. I've been saying this for years. This guy does not get the credit he deserves. Every team he coaches, they might not win, but they go far, right? Vancouver, the New York Rangers, the Montreal Canadiens, and now the Philadelphia Flyers, the way he's turned this team around. And granted, again, you can make the case that he came in at the perfect time and they were progressing upwards anyways. But I think it was a quality hire, and anybody who gets their hands on AV – it seems to turn to gold. And the same goes for Philadelphia. I think the biggest thing they were in search of was production from all four lines and depth scoring. And I think they found that. And a guy who's run that luxury is a Travis Konecny, right? Because you look at Philadelphia, all eyes always focus on Voracek and Giroux, and that opens up more time and space for guys like Travis Konecny. So I think he's a big-time sleeper. Again, you talk about the playoffs, you can't talk about a postseason matchup without a matchup game, right? And who's going to play against who. And last change. And again, these are neutral grounds that they're going to be playing on. But I think Travis Konecny could benefit from the matchup game because all eyes peeled on Claude Giroux and Jake Voracek. So excellent points. And, you know, I'm fascinated to see Carter Hart in this type of setting. Again, it is different because there's no crowd in play. But to be a young guy in the Stanley Cup playoffs, it's still called the Stanley Cup playoffs. So can you raise your game to that next level? I think it'll be fascinating to see. More so because you look, guys, at that Metro division, how many seasoned squads are in that division? Winners, proven winners like Pittsburgh and so many guys played so many games in the playoffs, the Washington Capitals. I think people are maybe giving a bit too much praise for Philadelphia. I think there's got to be some growing pains. I think there's got to be some tough times before ultimately you get to that summit. And I think it's going to be difficult because it's one thing to beat Washington and Pittsburgh per se in the regular season, but to play them in a 5 or a 7-game series is a whole different ballgame. And I don't know about you guys. I still got to take my money with guys like Crosby, Malkin, Ovechkin, Backstrom, Kuznetsov, guys who have been there before. And I'm not taking anything away. I mean, there's guys in Philly who have done some stuff in the playoffs, but I think there's going to be some growing pains, especially for that back end in Philly.
We've been saying it for years. Pittsburgh and Washington just don't have anything to play for in the regular season. Mm-hmm. It's been this way for 10 seasons now. For the whole decade, it's been that way for those teams. Now, the reason why I prefer Dallas and Nashville as sleepers from a gambling lens, listen to this, 18-12-5, 18-12-4. That's Dallas and Nashville's respective away records. Philadelphia, on the other hand, 16-15-3, under 500. You cannot, if you're a gambling person, put any shekel on this Flyers team and expect a different result for them in the postseason this year, given their away performance during the regular season.
Great point. And you know, that's my biggest fascination, truly. aside from Nashville's goaltending situation, of course, but teams who thrive off a crowd, Columbus, the cannon. When you don't hear the cannon after you score, what are you going to do? The New York Islanders play that brand of hockey. You know, that in-your-face type brand. Even St. Louis last year played a physical brand. Will they adapt? Will they try to play the same way when you don't hear the crowd going after a big hit? That's my wonder. And that's why the more and more I think about this playoff format, if teams with just skill and speed and all that benefit the most as opposed to a team that plays that physical brand of style, because it's a whole different ballgame, right? Like, what are you thriving off if you're Columbus? You know, the New York Islanders, teams who play that heavy brand. And that's my major question, honestly. Like, I don't know how these teams are going to come out when their usual game can't work to these settings, if that makes sense.
For sure. The Flyers were definitely one of those teams in the regular season that was kind of, you know, thriving off that rowdy crowd and, you know, the positive vibes that they had going on in that building. I think one thing that helps the Flyers' chances of beating a Pittsburgh or a Washington this year as opposed to previous years is they run a lot deeper than just that top line. I mean, even over the second half of the season, they were playing Konechny, who was one of the breakout players in the whole league. They were playing him on the second line with Kevin Hayes, and that was a really productive duo. And then you look at their blue line too, like Gostisbehere is an afterthought now. If he contributes at all, it would be icing on the cake for them, but you don't expect much here. But you do expect much from Matt Niskanen, and he was a guy that was like a do-it-all. He was producing on the second power play. He was, you know, very locked down defensively, kind of like a resurrection of his career a little bit this year. So those are other things that are in Philly's favor. They're not just a one-line team. They're not just a power play one team. Like, I feel like they always have been.
I like the stat that Robbie just threw out there. That's a nice stat. Robbie's stats going deep into the archives, and it's 100% true. That is why you can't put your hard-earned cash on Philadelphia. That stat says it all. It's a great job out of Robbie pulling it.
Now, I will throw one more out to the roundtable here that I think jaws might hit the floor on this one. Road record, Montreal Canadiens, 17-14-3. Their opponent, Pittsburgh, 17-15-2. Say what you want about Pittsburgh's injuries this year. They didn't have a problem at home ice. To compare, 23-8-4 at home. So tell me why Montreal can't ratchet up the physical play and shut down Sid and Gino. We saw this same series last year against the Islanders. Islanders came out banging bodies. It was hard to put a puck past their goaltenders. So why can't Montreal play that same style and upset the Penguins?
Okay, does Montreal have Chris Letang?
They have Shea Weber. They have Jeff Petrie, who had better seasons than Chris Crosby. Letang.
Does Montreal have Genny Malkin? Does Montreal have Jake Guentzel? Does Montreal have Jason Zucker? I've named like 17 guys who are ahead of any guy in Montreal. Like, I get what you're saying. Anything's possible, but I look at that series and people try to make a case for Carey Price. I can't remember the last time Carey Price made a save in a Stanley Cup playoff game. It's been that long. Like, I think Montreal's a long shot. I watched that team a lot this season. They can't score. They're relying on one knee of their captain, who's an outstanding player, has had an unbelievable year, but is in a tough predicament right now. I just think Montreal is better served playing their three games and going to the draft and getting a really good player.
Pittsburgh's, what are they, minus 220, though? That's what I'm saying. Like, if you're actually going to put money on this, you can make a ton. You could take 3 months off in the summer if you win that bet. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not saying the Montreal Canadiens are a good team. I'm not saying that Mark Bergevin's a low-key genius. I'm not saying that. Yeah. I'm just saying when you look at the road records, this might be a closer series than people expect.
Hey, well, we said it when we went over the lines. Pittsburgh should not be that big of a favorite. And Vegas wants the money to come in on Pittsburgh, and maybe Montreal springs the upset. But yeah, the value is clearly on Montreal, and you take a shot on it, and you hope for the best. Minus 220 is too high of a price for Pittsburgh. It really is.
When Crosby came back from the core muscle surgery, like, he wasn't the same type of Sidney Crosby that we've seen in previous years when he's healthy. So maybe, he's had a lot of time to heal fully, but you don't know if he's going to be at the top of his game. And then all of a sudden, if Brendan Gallagher's matched up against Malkin and he's getting under his skin, in the other zone, like, the Habs have some physical players, I think. Shea Weber is one for sure that could neutralize one of those two players, a Pittsburgh center. So you never know. That said, in our top 100 overall fantasy rankings, not one Canadiens player was there, not even Carey Price. So maybe that's like a rude awakening of all this upset talk.
They're going to need Jonathan Drouin to play out of his mind, Max Domi. You know, it's cliche to say at this point because Pittsburgh's done so much in the last 15 years, but they're scary, right? Playoff Jake Guentzel, I still have nightmares about that guy. All that guy does is score goals, right? He was doing that. I think he had 39 points in 20 games before he went down. They have that luxury. And I thought it was a really good subtle pickup that nobody really talked about in Jason Zucker, just solidifying that top six. Not to mention Brian Rust had an unbelievable year, a breakout year. I just don't know from an offensive standpoint how Montreal could stomach what Pittsburgh is going to bring. Not to mention, I still don't know who I would give the edge to in between the pipes. And I'm really not even piling up on Carey Price, but he's, you know, you got to go against Crosby. You got to go all those guys I mentioned, right? From an offensive standpoint, it's a bigger task than what Matt Murray or Tristan Jarry are going to have to deal with. I like Pittsburgh way more in this series.
I do see what Rob was saying, though, about the home success in previous playoffs. Like, sometimes when the Penguins hit the road, they haven't been so good. Then they could always come back and fall safe on that home crowd, and the goaltender usually corrects his game in those home games. So they're not going to have that luxury anymore. So all of a sudden, if the Habs win a sneaky game in game one, and then, you know, game two, the Habs are feeling good about themselves and Carey Price is – standing on his head, that could be, you never know. It could be a short series in the other way, like it was last year, a four-game sweep. Who the heck knows?
I'll tell you what, if Montreal wins this series, I'll treat all of you guys to La Belle Provence. Quebec, Don Montreal. Okay, how about that?
I'm so down with that, and I already know I'm taking a 1967 bottle of Don Perignon for the table. So, Nick, enjoy that check. One more thing I wanted to bring up to you guys. And I'm not trying to stoke the fire here for the Minnesota Wild, but when you look at Vancouver this season, that was probably the team in the Western Conference that struggled the most on the road to qualify for this postseason format. So when you're looking at these qualifying matchups, I think no matter what you think about Minnesota, whether they can score, who their number one goaltender is going to be, I think you really need to look at that team and say, hey, if I want to win some money here, and a lot of people are looking at the trendy Vancouver Canucks, why not go with the team in Minnesota that could pull a little upset? And again, this is not going to be a pretty game. Are you going to be sweating it out third period, your shirt's drenched because it's a 3-3 game and you're not, who's going to score for the Wild? It's going to be Kevin Fiala. So I think this season you could make a little bit of money on the Wild in a little bit of a trendy upset.
Like Nick was saying about growing pains for the Flyers, who have been in the playoffs many times over the past decade. The Canucks haven't been there in the past four seasons. Pettersson, Quinn Hughes, who's a rookie, obviously, and even Brock Besser have never played in a playoff game. Now, this isn't technically a playoff game, but it really is. It's a high-stakes elimination series, so it is essentially a playoff series, and it's their first taste of it. So the Wild have played a ton of playoff games, and you know, guys like Eric Staal, Zach Parise, and Kevin Fiala playing on the top line, you never know. If that line is good enough, it might be enough for Minnesota.
You know what? I'm about to guest on a Vancouver radio station later today, and I'm going to bring the Minnesota Heat. The series is just so intriguing to me, more so because you have the young crop, the young crew, and I get there's some veterans on Vancouver against the pride and, you know, the seasoned vets of the Minnesota Wild, their last hurrah before they sail into the sunset and they revamp their team completely, right? You're looking at guys like Eric Staal and Ryan Suter in the back end. Zach Parise, does he end up a New York Islander? Who knows? That's been my question since the trade deadline, but this season just keeps going and going and going. So I think from a pride standpoint and guys who have been there before, it is easy to overlook Minnesota, but never sleep on teams like that. And especially the way they were playing under Dean Evason, right? They were making a real push late in the season, 8-4-0 under their interim head coach after they fired Bruce Boudreau. I would not sleep on Minnesota because I think you make good points, piggybacking what I said a couple weeks back on the podcast, that there will be some growing pains. I'm discounting nothing from Vancouver, a bright future ahead, but you got to go through some difficult times before you ultimately get to where you want to go.
You guys all know, the listeners know where I stand on the Wild, taking the Wild to win this qualifying round, pulling at the heartstrings. Nick, before you get out of here and start doing your other radio hits across the country, and we appreciate you coming on and making us priority, because it means a lot. It means a lot. You're welcome. I want you to rattle off some pool sleepers. Rattle them off, and you better include Gorjanov in there. Rattle off some sleepers. I know I'm putting you on the spot, but fire away.
You are. We'll go to number 98, Kyler Yamamoto, right? You got to start there with the chemistry he built with Drysdale. Who knows what they do with their top six? You're going to see a lot of McDavid, a lot of Drysdale together, but also times where they're not together. So I think there's some value there. Even a team like Winnipeg, guys, I'm crazier about Winnipeg than most people. I think they have the ability to do something special. Anil Pionk runs the power play on the back end. You have him ranked at number 99. And I'll add to, the Vegas Golden Knights, Jonathan Marchessault, guys like that, Riley Smith, guys who have done it the last couple of years in the playoffs that are often being overlooked. Like, I'll probably jump on Pacioretty. I'll probably jump on a Mark Stone. Shea Theodore is another guy. I love Shea Theodore in the second half. He was really starting to produce like an elite fantasy defenseman. There's a lot of value, honestly, when you look at it. Even I think from a sleeper standpoint, Bob, the Dallas Stars, right? You're hoping for a breakout. And Alex Radulov is a guy who fell off the fantasy map this season. I think you find severe value in there. Honestly, if you look deep enough and names that you can talk yourself into taking who have been there before, or have played a lot of games, I think you have to make that push. More so because of the not even the fear of the unknown, but knowing that we have never been in a territory like this might make me make a move like that more times than not. So don't be afraid to go after it a bit here, I would say, is my biggest advice for playoff pulleys.
One of the things to remember too, like, we're always trying to hit the home run with these late round picks. There's a really good chance like the Vegas Golden Knights are going to go at least two rounds. They'll probably win two rounds and play three at the very least. Therefore, guys like Riley Smith, William Karlsson, Jonathan Marchessault, those will be like the forgotten names in a regular playoff pool as of drafting right now. So, and they're the safest guys that you could possibly take outside the top 50 overall, right? So, especially Riley Smith, you think back to that inaugural season where they went so far. He was the only guy producing for that team in the Stanley Cup final, I remember. So he's got so much experience. So Riley Smith, don't forget about that name.
Never forget about Riley Smith. Never forget. But one last thing I wanted to bring up here before we wrap it is Boston Bruins, another team that screams safety, Pete. Mm-hmm. We were pumping up Charlie McAvoy's tires on last week's show, as this guy's going to break out. It's just time coming. I read a story this morning on NHL.com. Bruce Cassidy was asked about over the weekend, hey, if Torrey Krug departs in free agency, what happens for the power play? He goes, I'm going to put five forwards on the power play. So now I'm thinking for fantasy, my fantasy predictions, my fantasy rankings, whether it's postseason, whether it's looking ahead to next year already, which we're already getting a lot of questions on Twitter, by the way, about. I look at this now and my brain's in a pretzel. And Bobby's got the Boston Bruins shirt on. So there's got to be some way that Charlie McAvoy can find more relevancy than a 40-point player on the blue line with that loaded offense.
That's a troll job, no? By Bruce Cassidy? you can't overlook the numbers. Charlie McAvoy in the second half, and I'm with you on this for a long period of time, guys. It's been a couple of years. Charlie McAvoy, take that next step, take that next step. If you were to have ballpark it right now and ask me, I think Torrey Krug's not going to stay in Boston. The fact that we've been going this far now into mid-June and he hasn't signed an extension leads me to believe at least he's thinking about going elsewhere. I think a team like Detroit would throw boatloads of money to bring in a Michigan native, and I think he could spearhead the power. He could do everything for Detroit on the back end. So there's going to be suitors, and especially a team like Boston where there's so many guys to pay. I think Yaroslav Halak is another guy, or they just paid. So, I mean, you've got to make sense of things. And I think they know in the back of their minds they have Charlie McAvoy, who is fully competent enough and is really becoming one of the best all-around defensemen in this league, that you would be crazy not to go with McAvoy on your first power play unit. So I think it's a bit of a troll job here, guys.
Well, it's nothing new for them. Every time that Torrey Krug is banged up, they put Matt Grzelcyk on the power play one. They've been doing it for a couple of seasons now. Yeah. So as much as I agree, I love Charlie McAvoy.
Right.
Charlie McAvoy, fellow Long Islander. But, yeah, I think that, it's been in the cards for a while now. But, for a whole season playing Grzelcyk, that is a major troll job for sure. it's going to be interesting. But I do expect Torrey Krug to stay. I think they make it work. I've seen some quotes from Krug over the course of the season, and I'm not too worried about that, to be honest. I think Krug will be back.
Also, when you're making decisions to put money on these teams, I don't like seeing these reporters asking coaches, about guys in the UFA period. They haven't even played the postseason
yet.
Like, let's focus on the job at hand before we're going to do the office work upstairs with the contracts. Like, there hasn't been – the puck hasn't been dropped yet. No one is taking the full practice yet. Like, let's go one day at a time here before we start asking about what's the first power play going to look like next regular season. What about the postseason?
Yeah.
You got to fill the time. You got to write your columns. You got to get the rumors out there. But you're right. I mean, distractions, right? You haven't even dropped the puck. You haven't even started training camp yet. We're talking about unrestricted free agents. So, again, we're in uncharted territory. It's going to be fun as we move closer. But expect the unexpected in every aspect, including what, you know, the writers and all the pundits are asking and doing and saying and writing.
I'm already handicapping Alex Ovechkin's UFA status next summer. So I don't
know what I'm doing on that. I think get that going. Better. Never too early.
Do you guys see the Bruins, you know, before we wrap up here, do you guys see, like last year we were talking about, you know, Tampa Bay Lightning, them or the Field, the Bruins are the best team. Is it them or the Field? I would lean towards the Field. I would even say they might be on upset alert depending on who they play after this long pause in the first round. What do you guys think about that?
I would say, like, you know, the way things structure up right now, and this is assuming that a lower seed doesn't take care of somebody in the play-in, we're on a collision course for the Maple Leafs and the Boston Bruins. And at some point in time, you think the Leafs are going to find a way to beat Boston in the playoffs. Is this the year? I think it would make a lot of sense in a year with no crowd. And I mean, it's just a different type of situation. I would not be shocked at all. I think the Maple Leafs are going upwards clearly still. I think people would disagree with that. And perhaps this is this year. Like, I mean, Boston has done so much winning and we keep waiting for that team to hit a wall and they don't hit a wall. So I wish I'd have a better answer for you, but I don't.
I'm going with the Field as well, Pete.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
My logic on this one, look at Dallas. That's a team that struggled to score during the regular season because their top line wasn't scoring. Boston's the exact opposite. The only line scoring in Boston was the top line. That team got too used to relying on that top line, which granted is the best line in hockey. But don't fool me. If there's any adjustments made, if there's any way to take those guys out of the game for just a period of play to shut them down, that gives the opponents a big upper hand. And I'm just worried that Boston got way too used to relying on that crutch of having that line and not finding another way to play. So I don't think they can get that going for two deep postseason runs in a row.
In this format, whoever you ask me, Toronto Maple Leafs, Boston Bruins, St. Louis Blues, a certain team or the Field, in this format and what's going on, you have to take the Field. You got to take the Field.
Especially last year, you saw what happened last year. There's no way, you know. Like Tampa, right? Tampa was the best team in hockey. I think they had the best output in terms of points in like 25 years or something. And they, you know, they did nothing. So, right?
Yeah, and I think that what Robbie was saying is spot on about their second line. I mean, who's going to step up for that second line other than David Krejci? Is it going to be DeBrusque? We've been waiting for three years for it to happen.
Let's go.
Is it going to be Andre Kasha, who's only played six games with the Bruins? Is
injury plagued? Let's go.
I mean, I'm not – these are not –
I'm fired up.
Yeah, these are not putting me over the top here about picking the Bruins to win the Cup or at least go back representing the East. But anyway, Nick, thanks so much for hopping on. Really good stuff. Looking forward to seeing some playoff rankings from you in the next couple of weeks or something. What do you think?
We'll see what I can put together. I've already been doing my rankings for next year, but yeah, I would think something else is coming out. We'll see.
Nick, the check is in the mail. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. You're the best. Have a great day. Okay.
Thanks, guys. Take it easy.
All right. So for Nick Alberga, follow him at the Golden Muzzy, Bob Bender at Aircheck, Robbie Reese at NHL Reese, and myself, NHL Jensen, signing off. NHL Fantasy on Ice. Appreciate you listening.